All right, good evening. Let us begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Someday. Okay, so may we have the roll call, please?
Good evening, Commissioners. I'd like to take the roll call. Commissioner Hurd is excused.
Yes.
And Commissioner Hartwig?
Present.
Commissioner Pitts?
Here.
Commissioner Main?
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner McGrath?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion for the approval of the last meeting's minutes?
I will move to approve.
I'll second that.
And all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any nays, abstentions? Hearing none, carries unanimously. Old or unfinished business? There is none. Modifications to the agenda. Are there any modifications to the agenda? Nope, hearing none. We'll be moving on then to new business. Item A.
Good evening, Commissioners. I would like to call to the podium Chief Carol Duplessis, who's going to give a series of presentations to recognize some of the people that we've worked with for some time, but particularly for this year, really went above and beyond for our residents.
All right. All right.
Whoops.
Still no. No mic. Oh, there we go. All right. Carol Duplessis, Chief of Police. I'm honored today. I want to take time to thank a lot of groups and for helping it, this season of giving, we want to call it. You know, this year we did a lot of things, you know, for our community. And, you know, internally we clearly have the right heart. Stewardship is actually part of what we do, and if we're not going to do it, who does? And I would have to say that the people in the Housing Authority, they just do it admirably. We can't thank everybody. There's no way, but there is a great group of people that are in the audience that represent other groups that we do want to have come up, and we want to give thanks for what they do. Two of the organizations, one is Grocery Outlet, who has donated food for our food drive for the last few years. They could not make it. Second one, Target, could not make it also. But at the last minute last year, they actually opened up their doors and allowed us to bring 21 kids for shopping sprees the day before Christmas. A lot of these kids would not have had toys if in fact we had not brought them, and all the toys were paid for by the Police Officers Foundation, you know, to help support our children. We most certainly want to make sure that our kids have everything that they need and enjoy the holidays just as the same as everyone else. But we do have four groups still represented today, and I would like to ask our board chair and Mr. Johnson if you can come up and help with the presentation. And first one, I'm going to ask Sergeant Jacobs to come forward. Why don't you guys stand up front? I believe Officer Souza's here to take some pictures. Oh, there he is. Perfect. I want to invite two members of the Oakland Zoo, and forgive me, okay? But can I just say Lisa and Nick? If we have you come up also. Officer Christy Bauman couldn't make it, but Sergeant Jacobs is her supervisor. And the Oakland Zoo actually afforded us tickets for children throughout the year. I believe the first trip we did was October with our children. Not only did they do that, but they took time out with the children, explained the zoo, explained various things. And these kids had never been to the zoo. And they were all our children and on our properties. To extend it all, they also invite the kids to the Oakland Lights for Christmas. That once again, Sergeant Jacobs and his squad took the children. And again, they just were just absolutely fabulous, taking out times. And, you know, Nick had just told me that you know, they want to do more things. That they, it's just not kids, but for adults or for others. And that's the kind of community commitment that we need to help, you know, with our families, to help them grow and to help us also with that level of stewardship in order to be able to provide our families with the best life possible. So I want to congratulate, I want to thank the Oakland Zoo for assisting the Housing Authority, not the Housing Authority Police, but the Housing Authority in achieving its goals and objectives, you know, in providing some great assistance to our families. Thank you very much. I'd like to have Nicole Thompson come up to the mic. And I have been advised that Target is actually here. So do we have a representative from Target? Can I have you come up? And this time I have an excuse because she didn't write your last name, but we have Lily and Katie from Target in Emeryville. Please come on. We know it was the last minute for Target having the shop for our kids, but we wound up having, you know, some extra funds, and the police officers will be up here earlier, but they clearly wanted to leave nothing off the table. And it was actually Ms. Thompson who came up with the idea of contacting you to see if we can do something with our kids. And, she is a true steward, you know, for the Housing Authority and just a great representative. But we do want to thank Target. We do appreciate the partnership. We want the partnership to continue. But once again, we want to thank you also for helping the Housing Authority, helping our kids, because you made it great for 21 kids to have a memorable Christmas. So I thank you very much. You're coming back, right, Nicole?
Yes.
All right. While Nicole's coming back, if we can have Howard Holt come up. From the Black Firefighter Association, we got our heroes. This is the second or third year, Nicole?
Eighth year.
With working with the Black Firefighter Association. This year specifically, they actually provided food bags for over 300 of our families that went along with what we also provided. We gave food to almost 400 families this year, and a lot of it because of the work that you do. Now, it wasn't just a food drive. We've seen you at Holiday Splendor and other events. They've assisted us with backpacks and what else? The Desley's event also, you know. We do want to thank you. You know, clearly, once again, you know, it's great to partner with another city department, you know. We are police, but we have nothing against firefighters. You guys are our heroes also. But we do want to thank you, and we want to make sure you thank Damon and a lot of the other ones that were there for the event. You know, you guys have all been absolutely fantastic. But we want this partnership to continue, so thank you very much. All right, last but not least, can I have Ms. Lanita Ellis come up? And I'm going to ask two of our own, Sergeant Casey Mooneyham, who is the president of the Oakland Housing Authority Police Officers Foundation, and Freddie Villarreal, who is the president of the Oakland Housing Authority Police Officers Association. I can have you both come up. Foundation and POA president. The officers, clearly, you know, I got to tell you, I am clearly blessed to be chief of such a great group. It's not pulling teeth to get them to do things. They clearly want to. They want to help and they want to assist. And I wish we had kept tabs over the years, but I would venture to say that these officers probably have spent pretty close to $40,000 of their own money over the last 15, 16 years on community events. And when things happen, I mean, they step up, you know, whether it was the Nava shooting when the little child, when they immediately brought a check for over $2,000 for the family to providing food. I believe 3 years ago, I believe that their contribution was almost $5,000 for food for families, in addition to, I believe about 15 years straight, they gave between $500 and $1,000 for the Holiday Splendor. You know, they clearly support our family, as well as the community. And we can't thank you enough. We absolutely cannot thank you enough. Because there's one thing to tell you to risk your life, but then it's nothing when you come out of your pocket to go well and beyond. You two are clearly great representatives of the police department. I am proud to have you both serving as presidents over these two foundations, and I do want to congratulate you. Keep it up, and guess what? Let's try to do better next year. Congratulations. There you go. That's it. Yeah. Commissioners, that concludes my presentation. Do you have any comments or questions? He is the boss today, isn't he?
I just have one comment that this has really been a very uplifting experience, and I just think that it's really wonderful that we are doing this, you're doing this, and with all of these partners working together to help with this. I mean, this is really cool. This is what gives OHA spirit. I mean, and this really reflects the spirit that I think we all that makes us so proud to be on the commission of an organization like this. This is really wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, that's it. All right.
It's great to see that Nicole's at Target shop.
Okay.
Okay, so moving on to item B.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners. I also just want to point out, just because Target's still here, that when they were hiring, we did a lot of outreach for them, and a lot of our residents are currently working at the Target Oakland store, and I really was grateful for that. I mentioned to them that I don't think it caught on the record. Moving on to item B, consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to safeguard public safety by ensuring that the Oakland Housing Authority Chief of Police develops and implements procedures to guarantee that all agency-owned firearms are destroyed after their useful life. I would like Chief Duplessis to give us a discussion on the item. He brought it forward, and I think it's an excellent idea, and we can explain our rationale going forward. Chief, I'll turn it over to you.
Carol Duplessis, Chief of Police. This is not working for me.
Hold it.
We'll get a better stand for you next time.
Carol Duplessis, Chief of Police. This is not something that has just been generated from the recent discussions regarding gun violence. I mean, this has been part of questions that I've asked of my staff and been considering for some time. Our practice for our handguns has been to trade them in to the vendor and to buy newer guns at a lower cost from the trade-ins. Never was our intent to trade in our shotguns or our patrol rifles that we use for entries because of the type of weapons. They're considered assault type. But handguns is clearly something I don't want them winding up in other communities, our community, overseas, anywhere else. It's not as if I am against the Second Amendment because I'm here to protect all the laws and the rules. But clearly, I think that we should not be taking part in any proliferation of having firearms back on our streets. Now, why take it to the board? Well, because something I strongly believe in, it's something that I actually could have just done on my own. But clearly, I'll tell you, if I leave here in a couple of years, I want to make sure whoever the new chief has great rationale to bring it back to you if they want to change it. Because I don't think that we should be doing anything to put any weapons back on the streets once they've served their useful life from the Housing Authority Police Department. It will be an additional cost to us. It won't be significant. But nevertheless, I think at the end of the day, it's worth it, that we clearly don't want to put any guns on the street.
Commissioner May. It's hard to hear you a little bit. I think if you hold that closer to your mouth, I can hear you better. But it sounded like you said, I wasn't sure if you said if or when I leave here in a couple of years. Could you clarify that, please?
Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure the recorder's working.
Yes.
I know I look good, but I turned 50 in June. So it's only a matter of time. And the bottom line is we have great people that are behind me ready to do their thing. So, a couple of years, yes, I'll be retiring.
And, thinking about it?
No, I'm strongly thinking about it.
Okay.
But I'm still having fun, though. I have a few things I want to do first.
Good.
Yeah, but nevertheless, like I said, whoever the new chief is, they want to change it. They need to come back to you to change this.
My real question is more, has it been documented in the past that the guns that we turn in end up in other places?
We don't know quite where those guns wind up. We're fairly certain that they don't wind up back in California. They could be in other states. They can go overseas, but we don't know. We're not sure at all exactly where they go. I've heard that some wind up overseas. I've heard some are sold in Philadelphia, which I'm not trying to increase their crime rate either.
And I understand that the city of Oakland does have a gun destruction program.
They have a gun destruction program for weapons that they seize, not necessarily for their own firearms. And I'm not talking about our seized firearms. Those go to Oakland for their destruction. I'm talking about the guns that our police officers carry and that they use day to day. I don't know what their policy is. I do know that various other law enforcement do. I've actually ran this past ATF and asked them what they do, and they feel the same way, that years ago that they had policy that they would sell them back to the officers or that they would trade them in, but they have pretty much the same policy, that they don't want guns anywhere, so therefore that they have a 100% destruction policy for their firearms. They're destroyed.
Okay, and who is responsible for the destruction?
We would be responsible for the destruction. We would either contract with a vendor, another law enforcement agency, such as ATF, we would be responsible for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have a question?
I just had a comment. In my experience, the difference between a good leader and a great leader is attention to detail. And I want to commend you for your attention to this detail, caring not just for the public safety here in Oakland, but the public safety in Philadelphia and around the nation. It really, I was very touched when I heard this. I was just having a conversation about this exact same subject with my family over the weekend. And so it was very touching, and I appreciate it a lot. And I think hopefully the board that comes behind us will say, oh no, we're not going to ever change this policy. So thank you for putting it forward.
Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner Montgomery.
Yeah, when I read this, I was very excited to be a part of this with all of the violence that we have. You said something about the Second Amendment. Could you just explain that a little bit?
Well, this our right as U.S. citizens to bear arms. Oh, okay. And everybody does have that right. And like I said, I am clearly not trying to impeach that right. If you want a gun, you're not going to buy our used gun. Go and you wait 15 days and pay your money and you buy it lawfully. But it won't be one of ours, nothing that we've used, that we've deemed inoperable or not service-related worthy anymore.
Okay. Just a comment that is not as applicable to us. I was going to ask you what happens when we seize guns, and you said that you turn them over to the city and they have their destruction program. But there are a few big city mayors that I've heard recently who are saying that they are actually not destroying their guns, but they're deploying the researchers to figure out what they can about serial numbers, where they came from, in an effort to kind of better understand the supply chain and the distribution chain of these guns. And only at the very end of months and months and years of research do they destroy them. So not something within our purview, and also something that necessitates a lot of money to pay folks to do that research, but something that, you know, on a city level, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on and maybe pursue as a city down the line.
I think Oakland's already involved in that.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I'm very certain they are. They actually do research on every firearm that they collect. Same with Alameda County Sheriff Department. They do the same, and they're actually trying to determine exactly how and where these weapons wind up. Now, it's a good question that I probably should bring to maybe ATF to see if that's also part of their program. Gerald, do you know? Or?
It is.
Yeah, it's part of ATF's program, and we do have an officer that's liaison with ATF, so that's already happening with our firearms. Clearly, we don't want to get into that business because that would take a lot of time, and it would have to create a property and evidence function for us, which we don't want. We want to make sure we continue using Oakland's.
Thank you. Commissioner,
I don't want to be left out. Everybody commented. I just wanted to say that this is another really great idea from the Oakland Housing Authority, and I'm hoping that we could duplicate this across other housing authorities across the nation, and I'm hoping it's already happening. So thank you for presenting such a great idea and moving forward on this. I firmly support it. If there's no other comments, I will move on this item. Thank you.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, abstentions, hearing none, carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners, and
nice
thank you, Chief.
Nice job,
good
Chief.
Job.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item C.
Item C is an item that I'm going to propose an amendment to, and I'm going to hand out a revised resolution that will encompass the one thing that I'm going to propose an amendment to and some extra handouts that we've received since the board packet was published. So I'm going to hand these out, if you give me 2 minutes, just so you know what we're looking at. Thank you. Now, what is before you? We have in the agenda item to continue our sponsor-based program. If you recall last year when we approved the budget, we approved up to $1.5 million for a sponsor-based program by the Housing Authority. The Housing Authority has included that in the budget. The staff recommendation initially came back for this item, requesting $1.2 million to continue the current funding level. And that was principally due to staff's concerns about the ability to lease up and expend the amount. If we were to expand it to 1.5, they would have to go through the lease-up period. The contract you're voting on is actually the current year contract. There were some delays in getting you before you, and it's finally here. I had some conversations with Sarah Bedford. I think she's in the audience along with Suzanne Shelton. On Friday, Sarah Bedford and I were talking about the capacity of the city to increase the program. They've been working with some of the providers to have funding available to provide additional services to increase participation, and they've actually think they have about 18 individuals identified now, and they submitted a lease-up plan should we want to go ahead and increase the amount and allow them to expand the services. The expansion and the amount we'd like to amend it is to increase it to 1.5 for the current year in case they are able to lease up during the current year. My guess is they will never be able to expend that money before June 30th of this year. But the reason that I want to recommend we do the expansion is if we start now, we can be at full lease up, I'm hoping, by the beginning of the next fiscal year, and we'll come back and include the $1.5 million in the 2014 budget. One of the things that was dangerous for me in terms of doing the expansion for this current program is it did take quite a while to get lease up done, in other words, up to 110. And we're stable there now, and we do have the services. And keep in mind, what we're doing here is studying a program that we're going to publish something that's going to tell the world its successes and failures. So I was concerned that if we tried to, again, up the amount of participants without services money, it was not going to show as being effective because we had done something we maybe shouldn't have done during the test period. We need to make sure that the services are also available. In terms of the lease up, I don't know that they're going to be, the lease-up schedule would have them not really utilizing that amount of money during this fiscal year, but by awarding them in this fiscal year this amount, it means hopefully by July 1st of 2013, when we start our new fiscal year, they will be at 100% lease-up. The schedule that I describe in the board memo about doing the evaluation would still hold true. Keep in mind the one unique thing about the Oakland Housing Authority and with these flexibilities that we have is that everything we do gets evaluated and gets assessed and gets reported nationally. And there are several sponsor-based programs in the country that are currently being evaluated and different models. This is one. It's dangerous to expand it unsuccessfully because what it means is you may have an unsuccessful evaluation and HUD will be disinterested, Health and Human Services will be disinterested. So staff was taking, I think, a very prudent approach when they considered expanding it. In subsequently, though, the documents you have, the city has been aggressive about securing Monday. I would like to see more people served, to be honest with you, aside from the evaluation issue. And I was thinking over the weekend while we were exchanging emails during the football game, and I want to thank Sarah for responding to that. During the blackout, I might add, I didn't respond. That was the only time I was doing it. That we could actually break out the initial 110 enrollees as the evaluation and leave the new enrollees out of the entire program evaluation period, and that solved that for me. And when I thought about that on Sunday, I realized that we could just take the initial participants and I would be okay. Sarah was able to email me today what I handed you, which is the funding commitments they've received to serve the additional families. It still maintains the caseload of 1 to 25, and that's important for our study. And so I'm prepared to move forward an amended resolution that would fund it at $1.5 million to serve 165 people, which I love because I want to serve more people if they're ready to be served. And now I'm going to, having had my say, introduce Janet Rice, who's been really working with this program, and her staff has been working with this program for a number of years, and give us an overview of where we are and the timing for the evaluation, I think would be a good thing.
So good evening, Commissioners. Janet Rice, Deputy Executive Director. You have the sponsor-based memorandum and report in front of you in terms of some of our measures. As Director Johnson spoke, we initially envisioned this program to be a three-year program that we would evaluate at that time and see whether or not we wanted to expand it. I, too, agree with Director Johnson that given where we are in the program right now, we want to serve more people, and so I'm definitely supportive of that. I think that's an important goal. But I also have my conservative side. We are under audit right now. Our external auditors are looking at this contract, and the program hasn't been officially audited in terms of federal funding. So that's really important to make sure that we can meet our benchmarks and our measurements and be accountable for the funding, because this is a unique boutique program that a traditional housing authority would not be able to engage in. And so it is using one of our flexibilities, and we want to make sure that we're highlighting that not only just locally, but nationally as well, and its successes. So with that, that's all I have to add. If you have any questions, again, Susan Shelton is here from the City Department of Human Services, as well as Sarah Bedford, and I believe there are a couple of providers that may have also come, should you have any questions specifically about the program.
Commissioner May.
Yeah, I want to move that we table this item and putting it in a committee so that we can... I'm just kidding. You see that look on their face like... I actually am glad we're doing this. One of the things that's real important in this is our youth. And first place for youth I see is getting a number of participants in the program, and I think that's admirable. I was hoping to see even some homeless veterans included in this number. Maybe we can get there later on. I didn't know that was going to be veterans. It was like re-entry. Is that what it is?
No, that's Volunteers of America. The Veterans Program actually has their separate allocation of their own Section 8. So they have, we do outreach with the Veterans Administration, are actively looking for that. Also, any veteran gets highest priority on our wait list, period. So I think we're doing everything we can.
That's what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Cool.
That's what I needed to hear. Thank you very much. So with that, I want to move the item, and then we can have more discussion about it.
Commissioner Dwyer.
So I have two questions. One is, so I'm a little confused about something, because on the one hand, I hear a desire to extend additional funds from 1.2 to 1.5 million. On the other hand, I hear hesitancy about the capacity to lease up and outreach, and I'm not sure how to reconcile those two things. So increase the budget, we think we can outreach to more people, and it's been harder to find those people, is two things I'm hearing.
So the initial discussion was basically that there was going to be a more conservative approach towards lease-up, and what has changed is now an agreement amongst both the city, Oakland, and the partners that there's going to be a more aggressive approach to it. What we also learned over this past weekend is that there were some additional persons that had been outreached to that were basically ready and just waiting for the contract to be signed. So that is why, rather than taking five or six per month, the agreement now is that for this next month they would handle probably 14, 15 people and then continue to ramp up through the end of the fiscal year. There's always a challenge because there is a processing of eligibility, and it's not as intense as it is with Oakland Housing Authority, but you still have to have certain basic minimum test cases completed. The other thing is our housing quality inspections have to be done as well. So it's all those things, and for a variety of reasons, a person may decide that they don't want the housing. So there's always that dynamic that you're working with in all those different forums to make sure that you can get those units leased up. And the previous plan was that it was going to happen for the most part in the last 2 to 3 months of the fiscal year, and that's always a challenge because we know just in with our clients how difficult that can be in order to meet those benchmarks. But we've been reassured, and the fact that they had people in the pipeline is going to help them to achieve the goal.
Okay, so I think that's an important distinction, that it's not, I was wondering if there was kind of a demand problem that there were, that for some reason there are not as many client prospective clients as we thought. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that's, you know, unsurprisingly, there are tons of folks who are eligible and interested. It's the internal process expediting that we're able to do to intake them more quickly.
And if you were one of the contract providers and you didn't know that you were going to have, you don't have the contract and agreement for expansion, it hasn't been awarded by us, then you're really risking going out and saying, I think I might have something down the road should they do stuff. It's not, it impacts your ability to enroll. So the smart providers wait till they have a written agreement, at which point they proceed, and it takes a while to lease that up. So they presented a lease-up schedule, which will get us at 100% lease-up by July, and I think that's important for the fiscal year. So next year I would anticipate them spending the bulk of the $1.5 million that you've awarded. And why that, of course, is important is we would serve more people on the tenant side in the regular Section 8 mm-hmm. program if we weren't diverting money. So not leaving money in this program that isn't going to be used impacts mm-hmm. how many people we lease to in the Section 8 program, because we'd serve more families who are already over baseline by a great amount, but we could serve more, and that's a real big concern, and I appreciate you bringing it up. But anytime, if we're going to get to a higher service level, it's going to take time to do lease up. Mm-hmm. And if we've got about, you know, 15 to 20 that we can identify now and then work every month to bring them into the system, we may only spend 1.3 this year, but next year we'll be at mm-hmm. 1.5, because remember, it's a 12-month subsidy, mm-hmm. and there's only a few months left. The last thing I just want to say about the household served, to let you know about, we could serve more, but this agency is currently serving 109% of its MTW 2004 baseline. We are serving more families this year than we ever had in the history of the Oakland Housing Authority. Wow. And I'm very proud of that, and I want to really commend staff for doing that, and particularly Leased Housing and Michelle, who've carried a lot of that load, mm-hmm. and I pushed them, and they pushed themselves, and I think we got there. But we also have, I would also like to see how much more we can do. And this is one program that will allow us to claim more families served, and that's a very good thing.
Well, that's great. And that kind of relates to my second question, which has to do with overall program structure. It seems like one thing that will be helpful is that the agencies doing the work, that there's more transparency of the process of what's happening, so that they can do the intake knowing that it's going to take X number of days or weeks or whatever to get all the paperwork done. And that it seems that there's now greater transparency of the internal machinations. But I think when you brought this to us a few months ago, you went through the structure, and I don't recall what it is. So I see agency OHA funds, and then the several nonprofits doing the work. Mm-hmm. Can you remind me of the role of the city in this, that our contractual relationship is with the city, mm-hmm. and the city's contractual relationship is with
the providers.
Some of the changes we discussed that we might implement for direct.
Right.
But can you just discuss essentially what the role of the city is
okay.
in that?
So the city actually contracted with the partners, went out and did their RFP in order to get these folks to be a part of their program within the city. So when we originally envisioned this program, the discussion was we didn't want to create this program ourselves. We wanted to tap into that knowledge and expertise around social services that already existed with the city. And so that was sort of the framework that started our then saying, okay, we have the housing dollars, and so they could take more of their money and spend it on services, and we would provide that housing component. So that's the current structure and the way that it is. And what we are doing this time is we're just making sure to increase our flexibility and our ability to be able to pay the providers should there be any delay. We want to make sure that we're going to be getting the invoices at the same time, so if there's any problems, we can make sure that they get paid in a timely manner. And then, typically what you would do is you would go ahead and pay and then base it on the reconciliation of those invoices subsequently. So if there was, for instance, if there was an overpayment in one month, then the following month you would deduct to make sure that you reconciled it out. And these are specifically being handled in a special way within OHA. We have one of our senior accountants that basically waits for these invoices because it is, it's a pretty intense audit process that we have to go through in order to assure we can make payments. So we've assigned it to make sure that it gets through the pipeline very quickly. so that that way there's no carryover or no holdover from the providers needing to wait for the money to come through.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Pitts.
Hello, Ms. Rice. I just had a question about our performance measures. Mm-hmm. The final performance measure is on page 3 out of 4 in this initiative. Says at least 95% of adults who enter the program with no income will have some form of income within 1 year, and it seems to be the one that we're having the most trouble meeting. We've got about 70%.
Right.
And well, so what's going on there?
Well, I think it's because many of the individuals leave the program for a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. and that's really, you have to measure that over time. Mm-hmm. So I think when we come back with our third-year briefing report, that's where I think would be a better gauge as to our success on that particular benchmark.
Okay. But we're looking at ways to
absolutely
increase that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the briefing report will mm-hmm. be to cover some of our benchmark measurements, mm-hmm. how they're doing, things that potentially the program could change,
right.
What's the overall financial state, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be a pretty comprehensive report that we'll be bringing back to the board.
Well, I look forward to that, and I second the motion.
And that is exactly one of the reasons why also we wanted to make sure we break out the new families from the old families, mm-hmm. because you need time to work with folks.
Right.
It impacts the data outcomes.
I like that idea.
Commissioner Castillo.
Thank you. I definitely want to encourage Ms. Shelton to come up and say a couple of words, and I think our other service provider on the benefits of the expansion if we decide to move on it. Tonight, I was curious what type of housing our people are finding and whether that plays into not being able to stay in their unit for as long as. Is this a 12-month subsidy? It's only for 12 months?
It has been a 12-month subsidy with the understanding that we develop 3-year benchmarks so that that way we would be able to have a 3-year window in which to evaluate the overall program. So it's approved on a yearly basis, but the envision
okay.
from the original program was that it would be 3 years. That's why we set a benchmark that said after the third year. So
Commissioner Pitts tells me, but for the people, it's not a 12-month subsidy.
Correct.
Yeah. It's permanent. Thank you, Ms. Shelton.
And good evening. Again, my name is Susan Shelton. I'm with the City of Oakland's Department of Human Services here to applaud your decision about extending this program, increasing the subsidy. Our work with the Housing Authority has proved to be successful as well as with our service providers. I think absent the employment piece, I think you'll see that our numbers begin to prove out really about what it means not to have to put people into housing directly and wrap them up in services, to be very critical and strategic about how we stabilize them. I think that we've come up with that kind of combination that I am hoping that you as the commission will see, that our staffing partners will see, that the stabilization that we've seen already going into this third year is impressive, and I want you to know it is not happening anywhere around the country. So absent that last piece about employment, I hope that when we come back to you and have more time to talk with our staff partners, Ms. Rice and her staff, that we will be able to look at that and present that in a way that you understand about the dynamics and the characteristics of the population that we work with, what it means in terms of their ability not just to have supportive income like Social Security, but also their ability to secure work, and want to explain that and present that in ways that has you know that we are being strategic and successful in the way that we are interacting with them. And then if you would, I'd like someone who's much more expert than I am, these agencies who actually do the work of representation from them. Vivian Lewis, please.
If you can state your name and organization.
Sure. My name is Vivian Wan. I'm the Associate Director of Abode Services, and I've been involved in this wonderful project since inception about 2.5 years ago-ish. And the commissioner directly asked what type of housing that we find for folks, and it's housing through through landlords within this community. So we have a base of over 200 landlords that we work with. Mm-hmm. That we actually have landlords calling us saying, these are wonderful people living in our buildings. We want more of them. So it's really been a great community building activity with our landlord base. And I do want to say that so Abode works with the non-transition age youth part of the program. So right now we work with the 100 out of the 110. And these folks are folks with lots of barriers. Many people have been on the streets for 20, 30 years. Other people that are directly re-entering from San Quentin. So really high barrier folks. And the fact that 96% of the folks on the Abode side maintain housing for 6 months and over 85% for a year. You know, sometimes it takes people 6 months to actually move into their bedroom. You know, sometimes they stay in their closet for several months because they're used to close quarters. So really, with our service partners, and I'm only one small part of this, Abode is only one small part, City of Oakland is a huge part of this, all of our service partners, Lifelong, and of course, First Place for the youth, with them together, we make sure what is housing really becomes home for them. And that takes a while. So, you know, this is not a one-year program. This is permanent housing for folks. And many people, we hope, will transition off as they become more stable, but it is a process. Mm-hmm. So it means the world to these people that we work with.
Is that sufficient?
Yes. Are those all in Oakland?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any further questions? All right, so the item has been moved. It has been seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you.
So now we
and,
are going
oh, for the record, and it was carried as amended, correct?
Yes. Yes.
It was carried as amended, correct, yes. So now we are going to move on to item E, the consent agenda.
Nope. Item D.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed item D. Of course, item D.
Item D is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to negotiate with California Affordable Housing Initiative's CAHI to lease additional office space at 1535 Harrison Street. The commissioners are aware that we have purchased the building next door to us using one of our affiliated nonprofits. Before I turn it over to Janet Rice to present the item, I just want to report that the CAHI held their board of directors meeting this afternoon and voted unanimously to enter into negotiations as well. I'll turn it over to Janet.
Good evening again, Janet Rice, Deputy Executive Director. You have in front of you our memorandum of requesting authorization to negotiate for lease space at 1535 Harrison. The leased housing department has approximately 90 employees, and they are separated into two separate buildings currently. In 1805, they are actually on two floors, so it's not contiguous at all. We have to maintain separate customer service counters, and so that requires a sort of a duplication of effort in terms of our employees having to service our clients. And so what we are hoping is that we will be successful in the negotiation with CAHI to rent space next door, because it would allow us to basically put everyone in the same building, and also it would give our customers parking and allow them to, for the most part, do one-stop shopping. And we think that's very valuable. It also opens up space for some potential hoteling by our Family and Community Partnerships Department, which works in tandem with our Leased Housing Department to help service some of our Section 8 participants. So we think that it is a viable opportunity for us, and so we're hoping that the negotiation will be successful and the building will be renovated, and if all goes well, end of this year or early next year, we'd be able to move in.
Did you have a question?
Oh. And I'll take any questions.
Oh, Commissioner Christine.
Well, do we have any ideas yet on what we're going to do with the space that we're vacating?
We are going to instigate a space planning process, which is going to be who can make the best pitch, because we're overcrowded in so many offices. and we are eager to do that. In fact, we talked at our leadership group a couple weeks ago just about kind of getting that started. So we do have the backfill ready as soon as the improvements are made and we can consolidate leased housing. It frees up space in this building and space at 1805, both of which are sorely needed. The service center space, which is woefully crowded, will be the focus of releasing some of the pressure there. And yeah, and then if there's, even to the point where we may consider moving two of our property administrating offices that service this area down here, as opposed to having them out on 12th. And that will give more room for folks there. But I don't know, if you toured it recently, you would know that staff is really overcrowded in that area, and I've just got to promise it. And the staff at 1805, I think, are grossly overhoused too. I mean, it doesn't serve our clients or our staff well to work in that environment. And the more we can ensure really privacy and respect, I think the better jobs they can all do.
I just was going to say, finally, we've been waiting for it for a while, and I'll move the item.
Cool. I'll second it.
Item has been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners.
Can I ask a quick question regarding Kahi?
Never.
Of course. Have we had our contract extended?
We will get information related to our contract on the February 19th. I'll let you know via email. Leanne will be in Washington to attend the hearing on whether or not they're going to make a decision on the date, whether they're to move forward with the award of ANOFA or to force HUD to go out and resolicit through an FAR. If they resolicit through an FAR, meaning a federal procurement process, we think it will take 1 to 2 years to get done. We still don't know whether we won the bid or not. We just believe that HUD did it incorrectly. And when I say we, I would say that the we now includes every one of the states that was not contested. So it's a large group that have filed briefs to be heard. The judge has let us know that he expects to make an actual determination on February 19th, which is, if I live to tell, we'll see if he does that. And I will let you know as soon as I know, but it should be this month we'll know more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we are moving on to item E, the consent agenda, and now if we want to make some comments on one of the items or have a little discussion, we need to pull it.
You can just pull it. It's no problem.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, then I would like to pull item number one.
Good.
And there were two items that had an increase, item E.
Three and four, I think it was.
Three and four, Chair, if we could pull those two.
Mm-hmm. So we're only moving two?
Yes, okay.
So two and five are what we're moving on?
Okay, so we're pulling items one, three, and four. Okay, so we're moving the consent. Items two and five are on the table.
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Okay. Thank you, commissioners. Moving on to item E1, which was pulled. Item E1 is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a one-year contract with 2 one-year options to renew for a total amount of $124,380 with Attitudinal Healings Incorporated to provide neighborhood orientation workshops and leadership institute training program services. We're here to answer any questions.
Okay, the reason that I pulled this item is because the information I have about Attitudinal Healing is that they have been spectacularly successful. That this has been a really terrific program that's gotten good feedback from everywhere. And we had chatted about this a little bit earlier today. I'm just wondering how much we can really accomplish with that much money in there. And we have these other programs that we're spending significant amounts of money on. And so I mean, I'm kind of thinking that it would be useful for me to have a presentation on this regarding what the capability of attitudinal healing would be to expand, or what other organization might be able to come in to help this out so that we could do more, because we have a lot of residents. I mean, if you look at it in aggregate, there are a lot of residents, and so if we are going to give them the kind of help that I think that they deserve, you know, I would just like to know what we could do if we put more money into this. That's really the bottom line.
Okay, so the process to select this contractor went through procurement. Back last year, we solicited for firms to come in and help us with this program. As you can see, as of January 2013, 1,266 of our residents have gone through this program, and I agree, it's been very successful. The foundation has been laid for continuing this program. Obviously at a significantly reduced cost, because when we initially came forward to the board and you approved the original contracts, it was several hundred thousand dollars. And so I think that there was a lot of efficiencies gained from the program. But I think that Ms. Aisha, who's here in the audience, can probably speak to more of the specifics in terms of how the program now is operating in a more efficient manner, so that they are, the development of the program was the key at the beginning. Now they've got a model that they can use and actually have people working through the program in a more efficient way.
If I could, if you'd like, we could have discussions with Attitudinal Healing and come back and see and look at their current funding level and evaluate it, because it has been concerned, Janet and I, we wanted to make sure that we have available resources to do the work, and that might be a good approach to sit down with them first, mm-hmm. and then come back with a presentation, and maybe now that they've been awarded competitively, mm-hmm. we'll look at their scope of work and see if we want to award more funding to them based on the previous to do more work and what that would look like.
Yes, I guess the way that I'm looking at this is a combination on the one hand of what is the capability that exists, what capability could be built to deliver these services. Mm-hmm. The second question is if you look at the total population that we're serving, and I'm presuming we would like to get to all of them eventually, I would be interested in knowing where we are in that process, and if we continue going at the rate we're going, how long will it take us to, you know, how long will it take us to get to everybody, and realizing that there's people leaving and new people coming in and all of this, so it's a very dynamic environment, so that we could just kind of get a good feel for the strategic lay of the land, for lack of a better word.
So when the program initially started, the process was anyone who was requesting a transfer from either our disposition process, or if they were new to the program, then they would go through this leadership and neighborhood orientation workshop. It was so successful that we thought it was important to just incorporate that and mandate that everyone coming into the program would participate. So right now, thinking about that, we are right now at, for the Section 8 program, we're over-leased. So that program is going to be basically through attrition, that you would have people coming back through this program. And it's not happening as fast as it was in the past. So the population that you're really talking about then is to fill our project-based voucher units that we have now. And so that would be probably the rate by which you would see people coming through this program and taking advantage of it. So I would say that depending on what our lease up looks like and how fast we can get people through the program, because it is a very defined curriculum, so mm-hmm. even if you ramp up, you still have to give a certain number of weeks for them to complete the program if it's going to be effective based on the model. So I'm thinking that there would still be, I agree with Director Johnson, we need to evaluate as we are signing up folks from the program. I happen to know that right now we have about 100 people on a wait list waiting to get into the program. Mm-hmm. So I think starting out with that and seeing what our attrition rate is and how mm-hmm. we're doing in terms of bringing new people onto the program will be an effective way to actually step back and take a look at it. Because we are asking for approval for the 1 year with the two 1 year options, there's always opportunity to come back and augment the dollars for the contract.
Yes, yes, I understand. I'm just, you know, every time this comes up, this pops into my head, and it's always the same question. Could we do more? Mm-hmm. Yes or no? And should we do more? Is it a good idea to do more? And, you know, I mean, I like to, when something works, you know, I'm pretty simple-minded. I like to do more of what's working, you know, so that's really kind of...
The only thing I'd add that I'd like to look at in addition is to see for the Leadership Training Institute graduates, is there additional program activities and follow-through that we can add into the contract for support that Attitudinal Healing can help with? So that was part of the conversation that I wanted to have with them separately to see what those would look like.
Well, one of the aspects of the previous item that I appreciated was the very clear metrics of what does success mean. And I have more respect, and especially in the programmatic sense, when we throw goals out there mm-hmm. that we might or might not hit, than if we don't have any goals and we feel like, you know, we're going to try our best and do a really good job with folks. So I think it would also be helpful, you know, in the evaluation of, like, is something working? You know, I was, of course, like, looking at the money. So 124,000, it says up to 25 participants. So at max, it's 5,000 per person, which may not be a lot, depending on what you're doing with them. Maybe a lot of money, depending on what you're doing with them. Mm-hmm. And so I think having clear metrics just was, like, for the previous item where, mm-hmm. You know, it allowed Commissioner Pitts to ask, you know, what's going on with income generation.
Right.
That would be helpful in the assessment of whether this is a great partnership, especially because, you know, we have contracts, various service contracts, Ibaltzi, YU, these folks, and some of them specialize in unique services, Abode. Some of them have very overlapping mm-hmm. ones, and so is there an argument to expand a contract with one service provider to touch a lot more households, and that scale would actually give us efficiency and a higher level of expertise? I think it would be interesting and important conversations to have. So some of that data would be really helpful with that.
So I absolutely agree, and I think the panel that selected Attitudinal Healings also felt the same way. Yeah. So we have started to work on drafting some of those proposed metrics, and it's part of the conversation around establishing the contract, because it just like it is with the City of Oakland, we have an addendum that basically said this is what we need to accomplish. Unlike the programming with the City of Oakland, when we started with Attitudinal Healings, it was kind of, you know, we really didn't know how it was all going to work because it was in the developmental stages. But you're absolutely right. Now that we know some of the things, they've actually had two evaluation reports done. So we have that as a framework in which to start from. And so the panel has already started to draft some things that will be incorporated into the contract as an exhibit. So to make sure that we have those performance measurements for you to evaluate.
Perfect. Oh, Commissioner Pitch.
I was just going to move the item. Oh. I think that Attitudinal Healing has done a great job. I look forward to seeing the metrics and those evaluations also, but I'd like to move the item forward.
I second.
Moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Abstentions? Nays? Hearing none, carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners. Moving on to item E3, which was polled. It's a item E3 is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to increase the total amount not to exceed by $40,000 to a new total of $340,000 with Edrington, Schrimmer, and Murphy LLP for unlawful detainer legal services provided to the Property Housing Management Department during the four-year term of the contract. These contracts were originally let and awarded, I believe, in 2009, and this is they're winding down and will expire in May. We currently are assessing. We've issued an RFP, and we currently have proposals that are being evaluated, and we'll award new contracts, which again will be somewhere between a 3 and 5 year contract, because it's costly to go out. We do multiple years. These are finishing up. This is contracts that is estimated to finish up some of our unlawful detainer lawsuits that are currently held by these firms, and finish up the work until the new contracts can be in place, and that goes for the next items with item as well. They're modest adjustments. If you can see both of these firms combined, if you add up the annual cost of them, you're roughly at 80. We're going up to $85,000 a year for this one, which is a very reasonable cost for the services, and $70,000 a year for Murphy. So you add those two together, and you get about $150,000-$160,000. In related items, before I turn it over to Patricia, I want to introduce who's with her. We have now hired a staff attorney who handles unlawful detainer cases and will also provide us consultation on our admin plan and ACOP issues. Tony Rush joins us, having a very good background, including several years with the San Francisco Housing Authority. So I'll turn it over to Deputy Executive Director Patricia Eisen, who can answer any questions on the item.
Good evening, Commissioners. As Director Johnson did state, this is merely a request to add additional funding because the cases that are currently with these two firms are in various stages of the unlawful detainer process, and to try to hand them off to another attorney, including Mr. Rouge, would probably delay further the ability for the Housing Authority to vet them appropriately. Questions?
Yes.
Thank you very much. The reason that I pulled the item was first to acknowledge that there was an increase of funding, and that I'm very knowledgeable about that, but also to put on record why we needed the increase, because I wasn't really clear in the language of the memorandum why it was that we needed the increase. So I just wanted to put it into the record of the meeting. Thank you.
Commissioner Pitts.
Yeah, I have a question. So that raises it to about $150,000 a year total for what we're spending for unlawful detainers between these two contracts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do we get back? Like, is it actually a good business decision?
Well, we've hired a staff attorney because we think that can help and he can do more. We will still maintain contracts with outside firms because there are times he's on vacation and may not be able to do court dates, and he wants to turn it over to them. So you'll still have some contracts, but I would expect the amount to drop dramatically with Tony on board. And that was part of the decision in last year's budget conversations of, does it justify bringing someone on?
Right.
It's very costly to have outside counsel with these cases. And one case can cost a great deal of money, particularly with the propensity to go to trial. You're much better off getting sound legal advice at the beginning of an action, which is why having all the managers, assistant property administrators, and property administrators have access to Tony to get advice and counsel early on really, I think, is going to help the whole process. One case, I mean, we have some cases that get very, very expensive and go on for up to 6 months, and that's really money that isn't being used to house people. It's being used to try and deal with problem family, maybe, or someone who hasn't been compliant. The non-payment of rent issue we're much more understanding with, and takes quite some time to get to that point. But when we do have a household who's really disruptive and creating a nuisance, we're moving against it. It can be a very expensive process in Oakland to get an eviction through the Alameda County Court. But I would say in my history, these are remarkably low attorney fees for these services.
And I was going to add to that point that when you look at the volume the Housing Authority has facilitated on the annual basis, when we first started the unlawful detainer process, the way we're doing it now, we would be able to vet 6 to 12 cases per year before property operations came into existence. We're now averaging 63 that go through an attorney, so the volume there is high. It doesn't account for the unlawful detainer actions that are lease enforcement counseling sessions. If you recall, we talked about making sure that we try to encourage and assist tenancy before moving to the legal process. So the volume of that work, which Mr. Rouge will be taking on, the proactive piece at the front end, is supplemented by these firms. And quite frankly, the anecdotally, and I think I'd get to co-signed by property administrator team, as well as the chief and our maintenance team, the impact of being able to remove families who choose not to be great tenants is phenomenally important to maintaining the type of property and communities that we're charged with as a mission. So I would say dollar for dollar on an average cost of a case, we have indeed reaped the benefits of these firms.
So I'll move the item.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you
aye.
So much.
All those opposed, abstentions, carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners. Moving on to item E4. E4 is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to increase the total amount not to exceed by $30,000 for a new total of $282,700 with the law office of Charles Ramsey for unlawful detainer legal services provided to the property management department during the 4-year term of the contract. The previous presentation would carry to this one, but we're available for any questions.
Commissioner Pitts.
Move the item.
Second. Moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners.
So now we are moving on to written communications.
No, item F.
Item F. People wishing to address the commission. I have no speaker cards.
There are no speaker cards.
Is there anyone wishing to address the commission?
No.
Written communications.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, written communications.
Moving on to written communications, I've included the usual report.
Oh, you want to speak? Oh, sorry. Okay.
I just want to introduce the commission to my new HR manager, Ms. Tanya Cobbs.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
As you notice, our HR director and our risk manager both have colds and or flus, so they're to not hand me papers until they get better. Anyway, the written communications, I've included the monthly report. There are a couple of other items behind the pictures I want to just call some attention to. One is we did receive notice from CalPERS of some benefit formula and contribution rates for members, which represents a fairly substantial reduction from what was previously awarded. This is implementing a state act, so we'll be in meet and confer about some of these going forward. There's some real impacts to the new employees, which is different, and we'll go into that at a later date, but I just wanted to include that in the packet that there are some substantial state changes that we're going to have to impact for our CalPERS retirement plan. Mm-hmm. In terms of the calendar year Housing Authority Insurance Group dividend report, in the past we had mentioned the dividends, but we'd never really provided the commission with how much we get back for participating in the Housing Authority Insurance Group, and at the request of Chair Hartwig last year, I promised to include that. So this is a list of what we have received this year. As you see, we have made $167,676 in dividends from participation in the self-insurance Housing Authority Insurance
Group. That's great.
And I think that that's a real testament to risk management and what they're doing to mitigate those costs.
Nice. Lowering risk.
She can't even speak.
Mm-hmm. The next item is just a merger of the satellite housing and the portable housing.
Commissioner Castillo, I think, had a question.
You're going so fast.
Okay. I haven't even gotten to my list.
Yeah, no, do you have to finish the whole thing first?
No, you can. Right? No, I'm fine.
On page 11 of the Office of Property Operations, mm-hmm. is it normal for us to have 44 vacancies in Lockwood Gardens? We probably have some reconstruction or something.
No, some of it is just the flip and lease over, and it's one of our big problems and why we're addressing the crime issues so much are people are moving out. Oh. So we have a huge turnover going on. It's really an impact to that neighborhood, and it is felt very strongly by property operations. We've addressed a huge number of issues with the community as recently, and as part of my notes was, I think a week and a half ago. Yeah, I couldn't attend. I had a conflict, but I was actually getting the board packet out, if you want to know the truth. That's what was going on. And we had some last-minute changes, which are invisible to the board, but which were last-minute changes before it. So it was Wednesday night, and I was stuck here with some stuff with folks, so I couldn't make it. And I regret it because I really have made every one of them. But we have, for the first time, a group of residents who are showing up and a large group who are concerned about safety in that neighborhood. And we haven't really had that kind of traction with the community in that way in the past. Part of that, I think, is because we've kept our promises. We started meeting 6 months ago with community meetings. We came up with what we were going to do, and we really followed through. Everything from changing the mailbox structure so people couldn't break in to proposing to, you know, do a plan and present to you a bid for cameras in the neighborhood so we'd really know everybody who's coming and going. We've discussed changing one-way streets if we could with the city. We've even met with the city. I'm not sure we're going to go ahead with that right away. But we're really doing everything we can think of to try and secure that community, because what you're looking at is the reflection of a community that they don't believe they feel safe in. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty serious.
Commissioner Pitts.
I also had a page 11 question, but mine was about the vacancies in the project-based Section 8. units. Mm-hmm. That's about a third of it looks like, and I wasn't sure if I'm forgetting something, or they're not in the offline category, so.
Yeah, we didn't really do an offline category. That's the total number. I think half those are currently looking to be leased right, are leasing up right now, and the other half are currently going through comp mod, so and currently getting the rehabilitation. We didn't, I believe, separate them out.
It would be really nice if you did, because I saw that
can.
And went, what?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's a large number, but that's the total amount offline.
Yeah, so there was only 18 in the offline, so.
Yeah. So about half of those are being rehabbed.
Rehabbed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And the other
half are being leased.
Just got rehabbed.
Yeah, they're leasing up as we speak. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Very good.
Yeah.
So just a follow-up question on Lockwood. When you talk to families, where are they? What are their other options? Where they're moving to?
I'm not sure where they're vacating to. I really would. I don't know. I don't know if Patricia has any anecdotal information. But they're leaving subsidized housing because you can't transfer out of there. It's a public housing subsidy.
Oh, right.
You don't get a Section 8
right.
voucher. So it's really a choice that they're leaving.
Wow.
Some of the data I pulled in the neighborhood recently, because we're looking at a program for the whole neighborhood, is how many, particularly young mothers with very, very small children, are underrepresented in that neighborhood. So they're really choosing to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is this a mixed income site?
No,
so
this is 100% public housing.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so moving on, the Satellite Affordable Housing and Satellite and Affordable Housing Associates have merged, so I gave you a letter of that just so you're aware. We have several deals with them, and I just wanted you to be aware of the merger. The Resident Advisory Board meeting memo is included. I also included two letters, it's front and back, for some grants we're participating in, just so you'd be aware of them. Of what we're doing. The commissioner meeting schedule is attached at the back. If you'd look at that, one of my items to talk about was just some changes in the commissioner meeting schedule. We want to propose to have the next special meeting on March 4th, if commissioners are available, and we'll cancel the February 25th meeting. There's conflicts. So if that works, we'll go ahead and move forward with that. I think it's a holiday or something.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
It
also
okay.
will work well for our agency plan hearing. So we'll do the annual plan hearing at the same time.
Everybody's
okay.
good.
The next one, Monday, March 25th, is another conflict. I think people are going to be at National NARO, or is it a holiday? It's one or the other.
Yeah. Right.
Which one?
Mm-hmm. It's March 25th. So we want to see about moving that to April 8th. Cesar Chavez Day. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So it's April 8th, and that would be so if that works for folks, if there's any conflicts, please email me so we can make sure we have a quorum. And then the 22nd seems fine. We may cancel the meeting if we don't need to have one because of April 8th's agenda. So if we don't have enough items, we'll hold them. May 27th is Memorial Day. So again, we want to move that to a special meeting on the 20th. Okay.
We're good.
Good.
Now I'm going to walk through some of my, we haven't met for a while, so if you'll indulge me for a few minutes, I'll try and talk slowly enough so you can hear and we can get through some of these.
Speaking to the mic.
I have several items, a lot of stuff, and I tried to narrow it down, but I really wanted you to know about some of these things. The D.C. meeting of the MTW housing, I met with Sandy Enriquez, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Public and Indian Housing, a couple deputy secretaries, and all of the MTW staff on the 11th of January in D.C. to discuss the assessment tool that we've developed in Chicago. I included that, I think. I sent that to you in separate cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting a great deal of discussion in D.C., which is nice. The working groups are going to be reconvened shortly, and we're going to re-engage the HUD process, and we're discussing with them right now what that's going to look like and how that's going to occur. It's extremely important, though, I think, for the preservation of the program that we do a couple of things. One is be able to develop a reporting tool, an assessment tool that really holds us accountable and tells our whole story to Congress and to HUD. It needs to meet HUD's needs, but it also needs to show our value to Congress so we can preserve the program. Last year in the SEIA bill, there was a lot of conversation about expanding the MTW program. That expansion eroded some of our flexibilities. Mm-hmm. So at the time they were expanding it, they were taking away from the current housing authorities who have MTW contracts. We're concerned about that, the MTW group. And I would tell you that the working group that we put together for Chicago included 34 agencies, and the last agency that didn't actually participate joined shortly after the conference. And so they're now all 35 of the agencies are participating. They have just expanded the program for a few small housing authorities, including Reno, one of our neighbors. And so we're going to bring them into the fold in the next conference call. But I think it's very important for us to get the correct agenda out in front of Congress and HUD. And part of that is the value of the program and value of preserving our current contracts permanently. That's what this work is really geared mm-hmm. toward. I'll have more reports as we go forward. We're looking at having an additional meeting with all MTW housing authorities in DC to discuss issues HUD may have with our proposal. It is a growth from what they currently do, and it's not a complete break from what they currently do. And so they're open to it. I think the meeting with Sandy was really, really positive. She was very, very receptive and open, and she's always nice, but she was very receptive and open. And what has happened in the MTW program, because the ASAIA bill included expansion, there were two audits that were conducted. The first one was the OMB, Office of Business and Management, issued a report that they did, and they had findings. And they recommended HUD find a way to correct it. The findings were all around how they reporting an assessment of the program. And they think that we should be monitored against the three statutory objectives of MTW and not through all these PIC data things that they're doing. So that's out there, and HUD has to address that back to the GAO's office. In the middle of November, HUD also published a financial audit of HUD. The OIG, if you remember, was on site for about 6-7 months here last year, and they did a complete review of a lot of different things in the agency, and they did one report. Alongside that, they were also doing a financial audit of the HUD side of MTW, including, I think, 5 housing authorities, of which we were one. The findings said basically the same thing that OMB said, which is HUD needs to find a way to actually monitor and review us and do a reasonable reporting tool against the three statutory objectives of the program.
I see.
So those two things converged, and we ended up with a very, very cooperative HUD suddenly. When we started doing this work, I was not the most popular person in the halls of HUD, I don't think. And this agency kind of was sticking our neck out. And we were sticking our neck out because we knew because we've been very transparent and honest about everything that we're doing. We've been completely forthcoming with everybody from the OIG to HUD about successes and failures, and we've never hidden our reserves from them. I think we were the first agency and still one of only two that has actually disclosed that every year in our report. So we don't have as much to risk. And I think because we know who we are, and I think we're run and do certain things real well, they did listen. And as the meeting progressed, you know, I know that the assistant secretary wanted to jump on a plane and come sit in the back of the room. But if somebody does that from HUD, it changes the conversation. And we had to get 35 agencies to agree to do it in a really accountable way. And we were able to accomplish that. Some agencies don't want to do it because they don't want the real numbers to be out there. They don't want to publish how many units are offline being rehabbed. They don't want to publish how many they're leasing up. And I've never had that approach. I think, you know, the fact that we serve so many more than we're supposed to is a good deal of our defense in how we're handling our portfolio. Other people have not been as successful at that. So there was a lot at risk, and it was a difficult conference, and a lot of time went into putting it together. And I'm pleased we're done with that phase. So I'll update you as we go forward. I included the report in case you have any conversations with anyone on any trips, particularly in March. You'll know what's going on, and I'll give you a briefing paper. The group is going to put together a one-page kind of fact sheet legislatively on MTW from the current agencies on the program. The other one, OHAPD and OPO, our MOU with the City of Oakland Police Department was approved by the City Council in December and ends a 10-year pilgrimage by the Chief of Police to try and get a signature on the agreement. And I want to thank him for his efforts.
Nice job.
And he wants to leave.
I also want to let you know that we have extended the police services agreement with Mandela Gateway and Chestnut Linden, which provides income to the Housing Authority to provide additional security to Mandela Gateway and to Chestnut Linden. That's been it's been renewed, and it's actually now through December 31st of 2014, so it's a two-year renewal. And I want to thank the chief for finding resources to do that. It helps bring our income, but it also makes certainly the West Oak Lombard Station a lot safer for everybody. We are also participating in the Oakland Housing Assistance Center, which is going into the housing community development on the sixth floor. And by participating, I mean we're going to do training for the staff who are going to be there, and we're going to have links to our site, which can help people find affordable housing. But I'm really happy when I got the call that they were thinking of putting this together, where if someone wanders into City Hall, they have some place to send them, or someone will know how to help them get through the mirage of how do you get affordable housing in such a complex environment. So we're going to do technical assistance. We're going to set up, make sure we have our website, and we're also going to train all the volunteers and staff routinely so they know what Section 8 is, what project-based Section 8 is, who are the providers, all those intricacies, and then also have a specific email to really the source people. So if they're sitting with someone and have a question, they can send an email real quick and get a response hopefully real quick. And I think that'll benefit a lot of folks. We are having the first ever annual two-day OHA staff retreat on March 6th and 7th, and this is going to be at the Scottish Rite Temple on Lakeshore Lakeside. I never know which one that one is. And it's been put together. It was initiated last year when we initiated the Culture Committee, and the Culture Committee has a planning committee for this. Departments are going to. It's where we're going to train our staff about ourselves. I did a sort of informal, smaller retreat with some staff, and we looked at one movie about stress that I thought was really compelling about how it's killing everybody. And I want to try and change the way some of the engagement goes on, and how we engage our residents and ourselves and each other, and in a way that can help make working here, I think, a better and more positive experience for everyone. But part of that came back through a questionnaire I handed out was everyone wasn't certain what everybody else did. And, you know, I started in the 80s. I worked for Touchstone Disney for a number of years and did a couple of films. And one of the things you had to do, even if you were on the films, you had to go through the training. Now, I wasn't trained as much as the people at the park, but I had to go through this new employee thing where they taught me the Disney way. Whether you agree with the Disney way or not, what their concept was, which I agree with, is that they did studies early on, and they realized, and this goes back to like the 50s, 60s, where they realized the person who has the most contact with their customer are the people who pick up the trash at the park. So the people who are required to get the most extensive training are the people who pick up the trash at the park. So they can answer every question about the organization, they can direct people to the right place so they don't get the runaround, they'll know when, you know, they'll know what's going on. And so we're taking the approach is we want everyone in the agency to know everything about the agency. And it's just gonna be an annual retreat we do. We're closing down business as usual for 2 days. We'll still address with emergency functions with police and maintenance. But other than that, it's really going to be closed down. Staff are going to attend it. There are going to be 6 different classes that get repeated that are taught by the different departments, and they're putting those together. And I'm kind of excited about that. One of them is going to be a Q&A with the deputy executive directors where staff can come in and ask any questions. That'll be lots of fun. I may videotape that one, by the way. And then there's going to be 2 plenary sessions. And at the end of the 2 days, we're going to give the service pins and some other recognition awards to staff. And this is all instigated and developed by our staff, and I'm really proud of them. And really, there's someone, Julie Christensen, who's not here. Nicole's on the committee. Who else is on the committee? Flo's supposed to be, and Artisha's participating. and certainly Greer is leading the charge. They'll all be on the committee now, but it's a limited number, and we have 20 slots, and so you had to kind of write why you wanted to be on it, and then we chose the 20, and because we wanted to keep it really focused so that people were empowered and had time to do it. So that'll be going on that day, and I'll probably send an email out to you if there's anyone who wants to join us, particularly for the afternoon on the second day. I'll let you know what time and where to go, and if you get a chance. We did the meeting dates. We need to find appointments for the ad hoc committee for the 2014 budget, but the chair's been distracted. But what I need with my long comment, we need to name the ad hoc committee for the 2014 budget because we want to try and get those meetings scheduled in the next couple of months so we can get before you before May. So an audit committee, 3 members, if you would like to name them.
Commissioner May has a question.
Yes.
When is the commissioner's retreat scheduled?
We haven't discussed having one at this point. I'm not sure that I see a need for one right now. we have done one, we did one last April, and I think maybe when we have a better idea of what we're going to do with either the development pipeline and or going off the federal fiscal cliff, and we'll know where our finances are, that might be a good time. But right now, I would like to hold off scheduling one and really focus on getting the budget done.
Shortly after staff has their retreat, maybe like the next month.
I wouldn't recommend doing it that soon. I just, it takes a lot of energy for us to put together a retreat.
It's a big deal.
And unless there's some issue that we want to discuss in a retreat, I don't want to really put the energy into it because we're so overwhelmed with March as a big travel month for folks, so it would put it into at least April.
I'm trying to push for a scheduled time because I think it's necessary that the commission be on the same page and have the same direction and understanding as staff. So when we bring things forward, it's dovetailing rather than conflicting with what staff is and the agenda for the commission.
Okay, I mean, it's up to you guys what you want to do. I'm just telling you that I don't have major issues to bring forward for a retreat, so I would rather hold on it until later in the spring.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking, because we want to make sure that when we make the request, it's not going to conflict with the amount of work that you already have. I know you have work all year round, but I think it's important enough to put us into that mix and tell us when that can be so we can begin to plan for it.
Mm-hmm. Chair, it's up to you guys.
Well, it's a recommendation I'm asking for to you. When do you think that would be the best time?
Probably May or June.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, because I don't know that I have not been feeling a pressing urgency for us to do, because I don't feel like we're really experiencing disconnects. But Moses' question is really well taken, because it gets us more deeply on the same page. And the other thing is that I don't want to have to use these sorts of events as removing disconnects. I want them to be strengthening things. So, you know, so that. So rather than wait until there's a problem, we meet when we don't see any problem, so that we then become even stronger and better then.
What would be helpful if you wanted to do it is to name maybe three people who could work with us on developing the items for the retreat, because I really don't know what to bring forward for a retreat at this point.
Okay.
I'm wondering if Commissioner Main is saying that we would like to know what you guys are doing in the 2 days and to the point to where we would like to be part of that. Mm-hmm. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. You know, some of us have some ideas we want to bring to the table, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and also, but
is it including what we think?
We want to make sure it's dovetailed. We don't want to have, like, okay, we want our stuff. Forget your stuff. Okay. We want to say, well, how can we include this?
So is that a committee to do this, or is this just we just kind of?
I would, and we can do this informally via what if you want to just designate three people to work with on developing a retreat for May or June, that would be helpful. And then I'll start sometime in a month when I can get a breathing room,
okay,
talking to you about what should be on the retreat, how you'd like it scheduled, and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Okay,
I'll volunteer to work on the retreat.
Pardon?
For June, I'll volunteer.
You would like to be working on that?
Yeah, along with you to set up that agenda, yeah.
Very cool. Who else?
I guess
Moses.
Oh, I see. Stepped it right out. Okay. So I guess I should probably be on that, huh? Or
don't be nice.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right. Okay, so the three of us will do that.
Yeah, all right, that's established.
Be nice.
And we will do that. Can we have some nominees for the Budget Ad Hoc Committee for 2014?
Okay. Budget Ad Hoc Committee. Okay, yes, okay, so we definitely have Commissioner Pitts, we have Commissioner Nagraj.
And you.
And me, right. Okay, thank you, Moses. Okay, so the three of us will be on the committee. Commissioner DeGrasse will chair it.
Okay.
Is that good?
That's good, thank you.
Then we have an audit committee. Now, this is exciting, audits.
I'll volunteer to be on
Okay, very good. Commissioner Castillo, audit committee.
Who else? You want to be on the audit committee?
Yeah, I'll be on it.
Okay, you'll be on the audit committee?
May want to do Ms. Hurd.
Maybe Ms. Hurd.
Ms. Hurd, yes. Yes, because she's not here, so you kind of get left out. So Ms. Hurd will be on the audit committee. And then we will have Commissioner Castillo chair the committee.
Great.
How is that?
Cool.
Great, thank you.
Oh, we're set.
We're set.
Awesome. Yeah.
Just have one more comment. All around, if you've heard a big buzz, and I think that Deputy Director Eisen and I had a conversation about it, is that there's a big push in our communities to talk about trauma-informed care. And so if I don't think that you could budge on whatever you're doing for those 2 days, but that I'm hoping that it comes up as a conversation point and maybe a training eventually for our staff. It's really, really exciting information, and I'll be happy to share what I know and what I have.
Oh,
with,
that would be great. But trauma-informed care?
Okay. Trauma-informed care.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So we got our committees. The one thing I wanted to just mention is that if you're going to the NARO Legislative Conference, CAHA is currently trying to schedule a group of all the California Housing Authorities who could go on Tuesday morning, and we're trying to have a conversation, a meeting with Barbara Boxer, who will attend and talk to us. It's really going to be a listening session, but I just wanted you to know if you're planning that trip,
cool,
that I will get you information as soon as that's confirmed, but right now it's scheduled on Tuesday at 9:30. Somewhere in the Rayburn building, but I'll get you information as we get closer and we know more. The CAHI.
Can I ask a question on that?
Mm-hmm.
Is CAHA going to include commissioners in that session?
I think it's everybody attending. It's the whole California delegation that's there. They've got a large room. It's going to seat 70 to 80 people. So I think it should fit everybody who's going. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the past, they have not.
But regardless, I'm going to email you so you know to go. Okay.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
CAHI, we are completing the acquisition of the 5 sites by CAHI from OHA. Jennifer's currently working on that, and we expect in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I'm hoping to record, and those will be sold over. We are moving ahead with the demolition of Bancroft, and the CAHI board met today. The bid is going out on the street for demolition and abatement. We also have an amazing art project that CAHI's going to fund of Ice Life Productions, but Ice Life, who's a native of that neighborhood and is now working in Los Angeles, but he's working in the Bay Area as well, and he's going to use our youth to do docents in his art project. We're scheduling it for it'll start Thursday before the first Friday of June, and it'll be on the site, and what we're going to do is it'll be an interactive art project piece that people can attend, and we expect it to get quite a bit of publicity. I'm very excited about it. At the end of the project, we're going to tear down the site. And it has to do with communicating and engaging the community and really marking and commemorating the destruction of what has not worked and the rebirth of something that will work. At the end of that period, once we do the art project, and it'll be open for 2 weekends, then on Monday night, the people who worked on it and all the kids that we can engage, they'll do their own private party there. And then on following Tuesday is when the demolition contractor will come on board and do the pre-demolition and tear it down. And that's, I think, kind of historic in a lot of ways, but it's really important for that neighborhood. It's been vacant. As of June this year, it will have been a completely vacant site for a decade. And so to tear it down is a real benefit for that neighborhood, and we want to commemorate and thank them. We're currently in discussions with different urban farm organizations to then create an urban farm who will hold the site for 10 years while CAHI decides what they want to do with it. So they'll bring fresh produce to the neighborhood, and that we're engaging the people you probably can think of, but basically everyone, and we have one organization that really just helps do this, and they're helping for free to plot it out, and they'll issue kind of letters of interest to different people who will then propose what they want to do. It does 2 things. One, not only does it bring fresh produce to the neighborhood and the education program, it also eliminates the holding cost of a vacant lot for CAHI, so they will be in control of it for a long enough time to have an impact.
Yeah. They're going to include the Cannabis Club in that?
I have no comment. They'll grow fresh produce. Notice I'm saying produce because I was calling it an urban farm, and then someone said, oh, are they going to have chickens and goats? I'm like, no, fresh produce. I don't know what it's going to be. We'll get back to you probably in a month or so and know what it's going to look like. But I would tell you that we're looking at employing in this project, and actually through CAHI and the Housing Authorities program is going to contribute in kind toward, is to get a group of anywhere from 20 to 30 of our youth in sort of the middle school, high school age range for to be the docents on site. They'll have to learn about it. ICE is going to meet with them several times to kind of work with them, and then they're going to be the docents during the project. The end of the project, we want them all to go to summer youth employment, so they'll go off to work. Meanwhile, we are planning the farm, and the farm will be created, it looks like, as a community event in October, because there's a normal October community event that goes on. And we're going to bring them back and, again, have them work on the recreation of the farm. So that's our design, and I hope we pull it off. And I really want to thank Patricia Eisen for pulling all this together on our end. It's been a lot of work.
Thank you.
Speaking of Patricia, she attended the Conference of California Jails programs along with Chief Duplessis and I last week at Santa Rita Jail, where we spoke to all the different sheriff's departments in the state of California. And it was about reentry programs and specifically MOMS and how it works and how those sheriff's departments could contact their public housing authorities to discuss duplicating the program, which I thought was an important outreach for us to do. And I want to thank the chief and she for participating, and she did a great job with the PowerPoint and answering their questions. We had the Lockwood Community Garden meeting on the 30th. I've mentioned that, so I will move on. We also had every 6 months now, our asset development department is conducting trainings with our contract management companies. And the reason we're doing it is because when we were realizing that we first walked in the door, it wasn't being done. And it's training on everything from 504 requests to submitting 50058s to HUD. It's a day-long training and some legal issues. And they held their six-month training on the 24th of January. And we do an assessment of 1 through 5, and it got remarkably high feedback. It was a standing room only crowd. I think it's becoming the most popular training for private management firms to send staff to, which I'm very grateful for, because they're learning about how you should be doing things correctly if you're going to do business with the housing authority. And I just wanted to update you and thank Anna Kadenovskaya for putting it on.
Cool. Yay. There you go.
Last Thursday? It feels like a month ago. Maybe 2 Thursdays ago, yeah. The California Association of Housing Authorities, which is an offshoot of NARO, it's just all the executive directors in California, have a retreat once a year, and they hosted it this year at the Waterfront Hotel. And I think part of that was my complaining that nobody ever comes to Oakland for conferences, and I want the hotel tax. And when NARO was here last, like 2 weeks before they publish the agenda, we get these urgent emails, will you do tours and will you do this? And I really was sort of rough. I just emailed them back and I said, you know, you're going to San Francisco. If you want a tour, they were only going to give me like 2 hours. You can't get across the bridge and back in a big bus in 2 hours. And I said, I just declined it. I said, if you want to book your conference in Oakland, the Marriott's there, we have a convention center, I will roll out the carpet and we'll show you everything, but I'm not going to spend, you know, all the time crossing the bridge to see one thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not getting any hotel tax. I have no residual benefit for my city. And that went to NARO. And so if you hear it. But I think it's having an impact, because I do think I think NARO, if any organization, I know they want to sell conference tickets, but at the same time, I think they really owe it to take us into some really interesting urban environments and show us solutions. And Oakland's one of those.
Yes. So, sure is.
So anyway, they were here, and we did a tour, and it was well received. And then we followed up with the Northern California Nevada Association meeting in Nampa, and where the chair dragged some people to talk on Sunday, which was nice. I enjoyed doing it, and I appreciate our participation of the commissioners, because we were well represented, and I think you got an idea of the knowledge and skill we have at this bench, and it was nice to see that.
And if I may comment, I think the people that attended, that heard you speaking, as well as Greg, they really appreciated it. Matter of fact, they stayed. They hung out and wanted to ask more questions. So in the future, we want everybody to come. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we're going to do more roundtables. I think people need to hear what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and I was. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. And Preston, our vice president for NARO, also attended and was one of the speakers.
Mm-hmm. And he's the executive director from Fresno Housing Authority?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that what really captured my attention was the attention of everyone else that was there. I mean, that session really worked.
And thanks to Moses for cooking this all up and making it happen, because he was really the he was the creative brains behind it.
And I only have one other thing, and that is I just wanted to mention that we have summer youth employment coming up. And I've been in conversations with the different providers and trying to get a handle on how many of our youth participate, because we really don't fund it. We fund one program through Youth Uprising, which is really tied toward our education program in trying to target those youth who maybe have absentee problems during the year and need some a summer youth employment combined with some tutoring. And that's been really successful, and we're going to propose funding that again this year, and it'll come forward. But the other thing I wanted just to kind of bring up that I'm considering and get any feedback is, you know, we do have funding that we could allocate this fiscal year and next to increase participation directly. I'm a huge believer in summer youth employment. It does two things that I think are absolutely essential. One is it keeps our youth from destroying our properties. So from my old management days, I always tried to get as many kids as I could employed, because it gets them tired, and they don't, and if they have to pick up the trash, they don't litter. It's just the reality. But that aside, what it also does is take them out of, and I used to come up with innovative ways to have them help with the grounds, because that was a big issue. But it has to be more than that. It really has to, we're trying to do more than that with the youth. Our challenge here is supervision. We don't really have the staffing levels to supervise large numbers, but the city is able to arrange that through different organizations. It also gets our youth out into different environments, which is what I think another real benefit is. They get exposed to things that are outside their high school cliques. They see a world a little differently when they go back in the fall, and I think that that's really a benefit. And I think particularly in a lot of low-income communities, the jobs that they would normally get for the summer are now being taken by adults because of the recent and because of the economy, and that we need to really make room at the table for our youth to have that experience while they're in high school. Lastly, I think it does provide really important funding for our youth to buy school supplies and clothes and things to go back to school. So those are my reasons for really supporting it. I've been a big advocate of it for years. Ever since I arrived here, I've been on the WIB pushing for it. Can we plan earlier? Can we plan earlier? Can we plan earlier? What had happened traditionally is the federal government did award money, and they cut that years ago. And now there's a piecemeal approach to try and get money together. And what I want to look at is how many people really participate. And last year it was around 300 to 400. The exact number, it's in the upper 300s. Of our kids that we think participated. Some people may never have disclosed, so that might be higher, but they didn't disclose they're one of our residents. But that's the number that we're able to get out of the providers. We have a pool of folks in the eligibility range, because it goes pretty high. It goes up, I think, to 22. It starts at 14. And I want to look at trying to see what it would cost us to say we want to fund at least as many as we possibly can, so that we can make sure all of our residents actually get served. Mm-hmm. What happened last year is they had a certain number of slots, and they were competitive, and we did huge outreaches, and we got a lot of our folks signed up, but not everybody got offered. And I think if we say we're going to fund our folks, we can make sure that they get the opportunity. It would also preserve the rest of the money for people who live around our developments who also need the opportunity to make our neighborhoods safer. So I'm looking at that really closely and seeing what we can afford to do, because I think it's one of the cheapest things we can do. It's $1,500 per participant. There's no administrative costs if we contribute through the city. It's just direct benefit to our residents who work. And I think that's a really good deal for us to consider. So I'm gonna be proposing something next month or so to expand that and come forward. All right, that's my report.
We look forward to that, Director.
Okay, so that's the Executive Director report as well as written communication.
Yes.
We're finished with all that. Okay,
yeah.
So.
I have two questions. Our participation with YEP and East Bay Conservation Corps, are we involved with them picking up our residents and putting them through, and at what level?
We're not actively involved. Whenever they have outreach and recruitment, they will call us and we do that for referral, but we don't fund them.
No, I know. We gave YEP a couple of houses.
Yeah.
And I know we haven't gotten a status report on those houses.
That's a good point.
Yes. And I'm curious as to whether or not, since we gave them the houses, whether or not they wanted to include our residents in their program
Well, anecdotally, I would tell you that I got an email from Michelle Clark while I was surveying summer youth employment. She served almost 300 of our kids using non-city money in summer youth employment because the city money wasn't there.
Right. Okay. Yeah, she gets youth.
Yeah. She didn't get any summer funds. Those are YEP funds that they fundraised for that they used.
Youth Build, I think.
They do year-round as well, yeah. But they've always been a big push as well for participating in summer youth employment.
I think they got the Youth Build grant.
They did. That they do have, and that's what they're doing the two houses for. And I'll get you an update because the one house is finished and it was on the market, but I haven't gotten any notice that it was sold yet. And the second house is currently being worked on. I don't know the status, so I'll have to check up and get it in the next packet.
Past it. It looked like it was in the same stage.
Yeah, I'll ask her. I'll get you an update, see where it is.
And East Bay Conservation Corps, do we get involved with them?
Not that I know of, Lynn. Yeah, just an intern? Yeah. East Bay CC, we just an intern, that's it. Yeah.
One, three. Okay. It's a start. Thank you.
Do we have any reports from commission committees?
Is this the education?
This would be
yes.
Any committee.
This is our education initiative met since we've met last, and we were privy to the exciting information from the summer programs that we did, which was many, and I believe that we touched many children through a variety of programs, and I'm hoping that perhaps later on we'll be sharing with the board or just the education committee, just the pieces about the different programs that we did over the summer. Yes? Okay, good. I really wanted to thank the executive director because as I was in San Diego, and I think that I told him if there's any way that I can come on the last day Friday to visit one of the schools, because I felt like here I am sitting on a table. I've never stepped foot in the schools that we partner with, so I just really thought that was such a disconnect. So the director was kind enough to, within a couple of days, probably with the help of someone, to allow me to visit one of our schools, which is West Oakland Middle Schools. And I spent 2 hours there talking with several of the staff members, including the principal, the vice principal, and we just sat down and talked about what our partnership looks like, but also what they're doing in their school to help our goal, which is to reduce tardiness for our children. And I was very impressed, and now I have a better picture of what we're doing. So I really appreciate you facilitating that as quickly as you did. Thank you.
Well, I thank you for taking the time and interest. It helps.
Commissioner Nagaraj.
So two things. Just one to piggyback off of what Commissioner Castillo said in the Education Committee. We also are continuing to review data, trying to look at generally how performance and attendance of kids generally in the public school system, and then trying to tease out of that what percentage of them are our kids and how are our youth performing in relation to kids generally in the public school system. And additionally, so in areas like test scores and school attendance, trying to do our own work to see how we can further support parents and what are the major ways that we, as loving landlords, how we can further support our parents, and what are actual strategies, what are real strategies that we can employ. I completely applaud the team for having very clear metrics of improvements in attendance over the next year and few years after that, and improvements in test scores over the next year and few years after that, assuming that, which is, I guess, contingent upon gleaning this data from parents and kids about what would help them more and supporting them and ideally seeing that needle move in attendance and school performance. So that's exciting and evolving. On the development committee, we have completed a draft development policy. So recall that there's this development committee as OHA is trying to kind of formalize its role in issuing funds and wanting to provide clear guidance to the world about what types of development projects that we want to incentivize, what types of programs that we want to build in the city. we're formalizing a development kind of a proposal of what we would like to see. And we're going to be holding a public hearing on that over the next few weeks to solicit further input from our fellow community members. And so that'll be advertised and, you know, maybe sometime later this month or next month. And we'll solicit public feedback, incorporate it, and then bring it to the commission, if that is the correct order.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Great.
Okay. Any more? Okay. So now we have announcements by commissioners. Commissioner Nagarajan.
So many of you know that I have recently changed employers, and I now work for Bridged Housing in based in San Francisco. So, which I'm very excited about. Bridge currently has two projects with the Housing Authority, 460 Grand and MacArthur Bart. I'm not working on any projects in Oakland, and I'm not going to work on any projects in Oakland, and I'm going to be working with Jennifer Bell to make sure that we understand a recusal system that is appropriate and clear to everyone going forward.
When it comes up.
If it comes up.
What is your position?
The very exciting title of project manager.
Okay, I'd just like to bring to all of our attention the acknowledgement of the very sad passing of former Commissioner Curry. Yeah. So we have lost one of our former board members, and many of us knew him, you know, pretty well.
And you could adjourn in honor, and I will send a letter to the daughter.
That would be beautiful. We will adjourn. We will look for a motion to adjourn in honor of Commissioner, former Commissioner.
I second that.
With a moment of silence.
With a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. And we will take a short break
thank
and
you.
Then go to closed session.